The Democratic National Committee was the subject of a lot of criticism in the 2016 presidential election. One of the big sticking points was the role of superdelegates. Those are party insiders who play a role in the presidential and vice presidential nomination process. Here's then presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders criticizing Hillary Clinton's early hold on superdelegates at a rally 2 years ago.
The establishment determined who the anointed candidate will be before the first voters got into the process. I think that that is a very, very bad idea. And it's an idea that we intend to change at the convention.
Tomorrow, the Democratic National Committee is expected to change that system. Barry Burden is a professor of political science at UW-Madison and director of the UW's Elections Research Center. He's with us now to talk about what a change could mean for the party and its nomination process. Barry, welcome back to Central Time.
Glad to be here.
Well, flesh out the role of the superdelegate. How does that work presently?
Well, it's a unique character of the Democratic Party. Republicans have really resisted doing this. It dates back to the early 1980s and was really a reaction to what happened in the 1980 Democratic nomination battle, where Jimmy Carter, who was a sitting president running for re-election, presumably would have few opponents, but he had a serious opponent in Senator Ted Kennedy, who took it all the way to the convention. And there was some concern that maybe Democrats had opened up the process a little too much in the reforms of the 1960s and allowed a lot of party outsiders to come in and influence the process. And so to exert a little more control from party establishment figures, they created what we call superdelegates, what they call PLEOs. These are party leaders and elected officials, combination of members of Congress, governors, presidents, and members of the Democratic National Committee, who now make up about 15% of the delegates to the National Convention.
And how did they play out in this last, the 2016 Democratic primary campaign? Were they a swing vote?
They were a factor, but I would say more of a psychological factor than a decisive one. And that was true back in 2008, too, when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were fighting it out for the nomination. The PLEOs, these superdelegates, are not pledged to a candidate, and they can change their preference at any point. But many of them choose to announce who they're for early on and try to build some momentum for the candidate. In both 2008 and 2016, Hillary Clinton racked up a lot of endorsements from the superdelegates before any voting happened place. So that's exactly what Sanders was saying in the clip. But those endorsements don't mean anything in a real sense till you get to the convention where they can change their votes and there's horse trading and everything else. In the end, the superdelegates were with Clinton, but so were the regular delegates. She won majorities of both of those groups.
And the goal here, it's kind of like a ballast to keep, as you said, somebody coming from outside the party. And in this last election, we saw Senator Sanders, not technically a Democrat, running for the Democratic nomination. We saw Donald Trump, not really a Republican elected official, coming in from the outside. Maybe superdelegates worked as designed for the Democrats and Republicans didn't have that. So they got a candidate that for most of the campaign they didn't want.
Yeah, it's a little surprising. So Democrats like to reform their process. This is what Democrats are good at doing. They run an election, something goes wrong, they appoint a commission to try to fix it. So there have been a series of commissions over the years, including the one that created superdelegates. The commission that's operating now is trying to figure out what happened in 2016 to set them on the wrong path. And Republicans have resisted this kind of tinkering with the process at a time when you might think they would be interested in doing so because they had an outsider come in and really take over the nomination in Donald Trump. Even when a lot of Republican insiders were not for him, they were for other candidates or for no candidates. And the Democrats mostly got the candidate you would have expected, the experienced Democrat who had come up through the party, had run for president once before. So I think it's something about the culture of the parties that the Dems like to muck around in this area and Republicans sort of let it ride.
Talking to Barry Burden from UW, he's head of the UW's Election Research Center, looking at possible changes to the superdelegate system in the Democratic primary. What kind of changes are they talking about? It looks like a range of possible solutions here.
Yeah, we don't know what will come out of these meetings, but we know that the Sanders movement within the party has really pushed to do away with superdelegates altogether. He and his followers, many of them view them as undemocratic, as a way to keep out interesting people and interesting ideas from coming in and keeping the party innovative and fresh and competitive. But there are lots of Democrats who like to hold on to those delegates, including the people who are those delegates, members of Congress in particular, governors, former presidents, all Democrats would be delegates. So I think there are a couple things that might emerge. The most radical idea would be to do away with superdelegates. I don't think that's happening. What they might do instead is either reduce the number of delegates who are in this category, maybe taking off the table the DNC members who are part of that group, or only letting the superdelegates vote in the second round at the convention if a candidate doesn't win a majority of the vote on the first round. That seems like an unlikely possibility. It's rare that convention votes go to a second ballot, even at the more controversial Republican convention in 2016. That didn't happen.
That used to happen all the time, right? There'd be dozens, in some cases, of votes at a convention. The parties have really changed things, it seems, so that they come in and you know who the presidential nominee is going to be.
That's right. Before about the 1960s, conventions were the place where the nominee got decided, because delegates came from states, often appointed by party bosses. They had different ideas about what the party ought to be about, and they would fight it out on the convention floor as late as 1968, famously, that Democratic convention in Chicago. But nowadays, conventions are mostly coronations that wrap up a very long season of delegate selection through primaries and caucuses. So it's sort of the end of a process rather than the kickoff to a new one.
How much of this is a PR issue, maybe more than a practical issue for Democrats? Because between superdelegates and some other issues, emails that came out via WikiLeaks and elsewhere, this perception that Democratic insiders were trying to put their finger on the scale.
Yeah, I think that's part of the larger argument that's going on. Again, particularly from the Sanders supporters, many of whom were not really part of the Democratic Party or didn't come up through politics that way. They're concerned about a whole range of things. One of the other issues for them are closed primaries that only allow registered partisans to participate. Sanders did better in open primaries often than he did in closed primaries, and they feel as though that's an anti-democratic law or rule, and so they'd like to see that change along with some changes at the convention.
There's sort of a base philosophy of what is a party at work here, right? Is the party people who are card-carrying members of that party who show up to committee meetings, or is it open to like-minded-ish people from the general public?
Yeah, imagine the most extreme form of that, where a party says, we're going to settle the nomination by a vote on the internet. Anyone who registers on our website can do it. I don't think we would think of that as a party. That might be an interesting process, but those are people who don't necessarily have a long-term attachment to the party, haven't invested. And so the superdelegates are a way to keep the balance between the newcomers who have gotten excited by a particular round of an election and people who have a longer term attachment to the party.
But is some level of openness maybe a way for a party to try to bring new blood in? Maybe that the Sanders supporters, if they had felt included, might have been a big boon for the Democratic Party, say.
Boy, it's hard to game these things out. And this is where I think the Democrats get themselves in trouble in a way that Republicans don't. They're always rethinking the last battle and what could we do differently. Barack Obama was an outsider, frankly, when he won the nomination, had barely been in public office, had not spent a lot of time in the party, and yet defeated Hillary Clinton in that battle. I think it's hard to say exactly how the rules play out in a particular circumstance.
We're talking to Barry Burden, professor of political science at UW-Madison, director of the UW's Elections Research Center. We're talking about superdelegates and a plan from the DNC to potentially scale back their influence at a meeting tomorrow. We want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see changes for the Democrats to the superdelegate system? Do you think presidential and vice presidential nominating process, it should be as close to a direct election as possible? Or do you think that there's a reason to have party officials, elected officials, to have that vote that they can make at the convention? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. We're talking about superdelegates and a potential change being considered by the DNC that would reduce the role of superdelegates, maybe get rid of it, sounds like probably not, in the presidential nomination process. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the two major parties are responsive enough to voters, especially in the presidential nomination process? What do you think of how Republicans do it versus Democrats? And what do you think about this issue of superdelegates? Should Democrats have them? Should either party have them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. To your calls now, Andrew is with us in Green Bay. Andrew, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you think?
I was just wondering if it would ever be an option for superdelegates to not be allowed to publicly endorse or stump for a candidate until after their particular state's election or primary election.
Andrew, thanks for the call. I don't know if that particular restriction is in the works, but it's an interesting thought to say, okay, they can do this, but they don't have that pre-voting influence.
Yeah, Andrew's not alone in thinking about that idea. Some members of Congress have actually voluntarily decided not to endorse a candidate until the primary or caucus happens in their state. Sometimes that's an act of courage. Sometimes that's waiting to see how the votes come out so they don't end up on the wrong side of things. I think our own congressional representative here in the Madison area, Mark Pocan, did that around the Wisconsin primary back in 2016.
Thanks for that call. I will go now to another Andrew in Stevens Point. Andrew, hi.
Yes, another Andrew from Stevens Point. Thank you. Yeah, I believe that the superdelegate system is really a blow to the will of the people. And I think it's a preemptive choice that doesn't have a backing.
Andrew, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. A lot of people felt that way on the Democratic, on the Bernie Sanders side of things in particular during that last election.
Yeah, and this second Andrew's right. It's not Democratic, small d Democratic. But I think party officials would say that's sort of the point, that they want to retain some control over the process, keep out really unelectable figures or candidates who maybe don't fit with the party platform or the image they want to convey. So I think there's always a balancing act for a party to be permeable and open and flexible, but also to maintain its integrity as a party and have some consistency in what it stands for from one election to the next.
I've heard some analysis saying that the role of the party as an organization has declined in the United States over the years. Do you see that, especially as it comes to selecting a presidential candidate?
Yeah, that's generally been the pattern. I think it's complicated what's happened over time, but parties as structures have sort of weakened. The internet has done some of that, and social media and other ways for people to communicate, raise money, join organizations in a more horizontal and democratic fashion than parties traditionally have operated. But they have a role to play. And really, the national nominating conventions are the last bastion of what a party stands for. If they don't have a role there, you wonder what they do.
Thanks a lot for that call. Andrew at 800-642-1234. Is there room for a comeback of the party as a kind of a mass organization where people think they define themselves as, say, a Democrat or a Republican, not just I vote that way in elections, but I am a member, a participating member of this organization?
Well, what we have seen an increase in is the number of people giving to political parties and campaigns. That has been on the rise for the last 10 or 15 years or so. So there are more people tapped into parties that way. And that's about as close as we get to party membership in the U.S. A lot of states have party registration. So that Wisconsin doesn't, but many others do. And so that's a way that people might identify themselves in an official way with a party in the U.S. It doesn't go much further than that.
Let's bring on another caller now. Mary is with us in Jefferson. Mary, hi.
Hi. My question is, if the Republicans would have had superdelegates, would it have kept, do you think it would have kept Donald Trump off of the ticket? Because if that would be possible, then I would say keep the superdelegates in the Democratic Party.
Mary, thanks for the call. It's a kind of a counterfactual because they didn't. But if Republicans did things the way Democrats did, how might that have affected the 2016 Republican primary campaign?
It's a terrific question. We'll never know the answer. One clue is to look at what other Republican officials did during that primary season. And these are people who would have been superdelegates had the party had them. Most of them chose not to endorse anyone. So they didn't line up behind Rubio or Walker or Jeb Bush. They mostly waited it out. And I think maybe the size of the field, there were 16 or 17 candidates at some point, prevented that. Some Democrats are now talking about a reason to keep superdelegates is to prevent an outsider like Trump coming in and grabbing the nomination in an unpredictable nomination season.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mary. On the other hand, one party did retain a little more control over their nomination process. The other one didn't. Which one won?
That's right. Yeah, that's why I say it's hard to game these things out. We know what the rules are, but the rules are really, their effects at least, are really dependent on what the field of candidates look like. I think a Democratic contest between two candidates, Clinton and Sanders, would have turned out very differently had it been Clinton versus 16 other Democrats. Mm-hmm. Then I think we wouldn't be talking about superdelegates in the same way we are today.
Yeah, Democrats likely to make some kind of changes tomorrow. And as you said, they tend to be more prone to tinker with their process. Is this something that in 4 or 20 years they'll probably be looking back and saying, oh, no, we made a big mistake?
Well, I expect to be on the program in 20 years or so and talk about what the latest commission is. And yeah, there's not an ideal solution here. No matter what you do, you'll be offending some members of the party and making others happy. It's a zero-sum game, some gain and some lose. Today, it's really the members of Congress who are unhappy that they might have their role as automatic delegates taken away. But you lose that and you gain some newcomers to the party, potentially.
I want to spend our last few moments on a tangent. I talked to you about this before the show. I surprised people on the air the other day by saying gerrymandering, not gerrymandering. I'd seen a pretty convincing Wall Street Journal article that that's the right way, and the article quoted a UW professor named Barry Burdon.
That's right. I think it's the right pronunciation. It's a term, maybe unflatteringly, named after a person who was governor of Massachusetts and a signer of the Declaration of Independence and a vice presidential candidate and a bunch of other things. Maybe his family wouldn't like him to be known for this, but it is his name. And the original term was the idea of merging his surname with a picture of a salamander in the original drawn district. Some of you have probably seen that was the gerrymander. You know, we're not going to force this on people, but I think it's the right pronunciation. I'm glad Rob is on board.
I am on board with this. Barry, no Barrymandering, though. Barry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
That's Barry Burdon, professor of political science at UW-Madison and director of the UW's Elections Research Center, with us to talk about potential changes to the superdelegate system up for a committee vote tomorrow at the Democratic National Committee. Democratic candidate for governor Mike McCabe has inspired and sometimes frustrated Democrats across the state with his people before party message. As part of our ongoing series on the 2018 governor's race, Laurel White has this profile of the candidate who says he'd call himself Governor Blue Jeans.
Cars are speeding by on a busy street in Madison. Three people, two middle-aged men and one young woman, are standing on a street corner holding posters.
My name is Sarah Wilson, and I'm out here holding my people-powered billboard sign.
Wilson says people-powered billboards have been a big part of Democratic candidate Mike McCabe's campaign for governor. She says supporters are making McCabe posters and standing on street corners and sidewalks all across Wisconsin.
Because we're not taking big money donations, it really has to be a group of volunteers going out talking to people instead of just sending out mailers or, you know, putting on ads or whatever. It has to be person to person.
Another volunteer, Alice Schneiderman, says she feels like she really knows McCabe, and she's never felt that way about a politician before.
I feel like I can go up and hug Mike. And his wife, Marilyn. I mean, when does that happen?
Schneiderman says she appreciates that McCabe won't take big campaign contributions. McCabe says that's a big part of his campaign philosophy. He won't take any single campaign donation over $200. No money from big donors or PACs.
All the work I've done over the course of virtually my entire adult life has shown me that there are strings attached to those checks.
McCabe helped launch the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, a group that tracks money in politics. For years, he was the go-to guy in the state for information about financial misdeeds by politicians of either party. Now he says it's time to practice what he preached.
This is an opportunity to replace all that money power with people power.
McCabe works to portray himself as a man of the people. His campaign committee is called Commoners for McCabe. He's written a book and advised other candidates under the umbrella of a group he calls Blue Jean Nation. There's a theme song for the group, a take on an old Neil Diamond song performed here by Peter Leidy.
And since the powers that be just won't see, we'd much rather be a nation in blue jeans.
Nancy Unger is a professor of history at Santa Clara University. She's written books about Bob and Belle La Follette, two iconic figures in Wisconsin politics. Unger says Mike McCabe has a lot in common with La Follette because they both push the message of regular people taking charge of politics.
I think Mike McCabe is really echoing this notion that if you don't like the system, then you have to change it. You can't just wait for political leaders to change it. You have to work with them to do that.
Some people are obviously excited about McCabe, but there are others who have major concerns. McCabe has worked for Republicans in the past and won't promise that he'll endorse the eventual Democratic nominee for governor if it's not him. Scott Ross is the executive director of One Wisconsin Now, a liberal advocacy group.
I think it undermines the credibility of the person who's asking people for votes as a Democrat who says they're not willing to support the Democratic nominee.
McCabe says he doesn't agree with the idea of saying any member of the Democratic Party is better than Scott Walker. Ross says that's a problem.
Because I don't care who gets out of the primary, they are all in a different solar system in terms of how lousy Scott Walker is and what a disaster it would be for him to be governor 4 more years.
But McCabe says it's disrespectful to voters to say candidates are interchangeable as long as they have a D behind their name. He wants people to, quote, feel really good about casting a ballot for a change. And voting for him, he hopes, will do that. Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, the Trump administration is looking at a major overhaul of the federal agencies that provide public assistance. We'll find out what would change and what would go into making that change. The creator of an insect zoo is going to bring his menagerie into the studio with us. Hopefully not let them loose. We'll get a look at them and talk about his work educating kids and getting them inspired about science. And in this week's edition of Food Friday, we'll cook up some flavor bombs. Our guest shares surprising ingredients that can add a whole new level to everything from burgers to desserts. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.